Hello, this is November 4th, 2024, interview of Ladan Nigravam by Gabriela Paishawi Kelly for the Cooperstown Graduate Program's Research and Fieldwork course recorded at William K. Sanford Library in Loudonville, New York. Hi, Ladan.
Hi, Gabriela.
Hi. So I just want to start out early with your early life experience. But I just want to know, start with a little bit about you. What is your full name?
Ladan Nigravam Fard.
Oh, okay. And when and where were you born?
I was born on June 2nd, 1956.
Okay. Could you please tell me a bit about your parents?
Yes. My mother was 16 years old when she met my father. My mom's father, my grandfather, that I never saw, died at his workplace. He had a heart attack. So my grandma ended up being with all seven kids and wanted to, because of the cultural issues, get the girls marry as quick as possible. My mom had a suitor that was extremely wealthy but old. And the second suitor was my father that was in early 20s, obviously young and handsome. So to my grandma's disagreement, my mom pushed for my father. And they got married in Mashhad, that is a very religious state in northern part of Iran.
Growing up, what were some of the values you had learned from your family?
Both, as mentioned before, both my parents, when I was growing up, they were teachers. So I grew up in a household that learning, knowledge was valued, reading. My mother was very strict in every aspect of our lives, especially for me as the firstborn, because she believed that whatever I do, my other sister will follow. So I have to be a good role model, the way I sit, the way I walk, the way I talk. She would always correct me and make sure that I do the right thing. My father always has been very loving and supporting, but the foundation of values that I live by, I learn from him, from importance of community work and working with others. He got a stick of wood and he tried to break it, and he broke it easily. He said, "This is when you are alone." And then he grabbed a stack of wood and he tried to break them and he couldn't. And he said to me, that this is when you work with others for a cause. So strength comes from community coming together, people coming together and fighting for a cause. I remember once it was New Year and I had brand new clothes on, head to toe, celebrating Nowruz, that is the first day of spring. In my country. So I ran out of the house and I fell and I was very down and I was crying. And he came and he hugged me and he told me that I always have options. I can sit and cry because of what has happened, or I can learn from what has happened and I stand up, clean my knees and move on. So these are examples of some of the simple thing that has happened throughout my childhood that impacted me also as of today in some of the work that I do, decisions that I make.
Great. So would you say there was many values that your parents had both instilled in you as the oldest child going through that you kept throughout your adulthood?
Yes. Yes, yeah. These are those. And the importance of giving, I mm-hmm. think the biggest thing that always has impacted my work, my behavior, my thought as a human being toward other human beings is the importance of giving, having a purpose in your life. And whatever is your ability, from financial support to time, to giving love, it's expected from you.
Growing up, I know that you had talked a little bit about the Iranian Revolution when we had previously spoke. How do you believe that this had affected you and affected your life as a young adult?
Well, when revolution happened, prior to revolution, there was a lot of, obviously, demonstration in the street and turmoil in the country. And seeing tanks in the street, seeing soldiers with guns, seeing blood, seeing bodies, tank going over people when they were fighting for a cause that they believe was extremely painful. So there was a lot of fear and there was a lot of a sense of being in an environment that is not stable, that is not, you're not safe. So until ultimately revolution happened and the country became Islamic Republic of Iran. So at that time, I was first year of college, and all the colleges and universities shut down. So that was first time that I felt that I was robbed from something that I was doing outside of what is happening around me in the environment, in the streets, in the communities, on the news, wherever I went, that I am losing the opportunity to continue my education. All the laws changed. Everything in my country changed overnight. The way I dressed, the way I was expected to think and behave. Not just me, but every Iranian, but in particularly it impacted women, young girls and women.
Talking about that, how did you feel like you needed to break away from that sort of ideal? Like, what was your safety for yourself while at home?
I think my parents, particularly my relationship with my father always made me feel safe. He was always extremely open and honest with me, and he would check in to make sure that I understand what he's saying or what he's trying to do. And I had many conversations about my fears, about my disappointment, that revolution has happened and impacted our family, impacted people, impacted my country, and impacted my dreams and aspiration. And that's when the conversation started about leaving the country and seeking education outside of the borders of Iran.
So going into that, would you be able to tell me a bit about when and why you had moved to the United States?
Well, for continuing my education and for having opportunities that I felt that at that time I would not have in my own country. So my first trip outside of Iran was to Canada, and then from Canada to Italy, and then from Italy I came to United States September of 1991.
How long?
81. I apologize.
81. Okay. How many times did it take you to get a visa to come here?
So I went to 3 interviews to be able to get a visa to come to United States.
What was your initial impression upon arriving at the United States?
It was very painful because I felt, due to what happened in the airport when I went through immigration, that all Americans hate me because of where I was born and because of the seal on my passport. But at the same time that I face challenges upon arrival because of the timing in the history of the world and the history of Iran and United States, at the same time also I experienced love and humanity from someone that I met in the airplane.
Would you be able to expand on that experience with the, you said you found like love and that hatred?
Yes.
If you're comfortable.
Of course. So when I arrived to the airport, there were signs for American citizen and non-citizen. And up to that point, the gentleman that I met in the airline and airport and in the plane communicating with me and talking to me, walked with me up to that point that we had to separate. So I followed the line of all the people that they were coming to United States with some kind of visa. And when it came to me, the immigration officer, the moment he saw my passport, he put my passport in a red envelope and instructed me not very kindly to go to the hallway that he pointed that had a red envelope on the one of the doors. So I proceed and I went knock at that door. The door was closed. I went in. The room was very cold, very scary because there was nothing there and a gentleman sitting behind a desk. So I stood in front of him and I started responding to his question as much as I understood. The conversation didn't go well, and I realized that because I saw that he's getting red and his veins are becoming very prominent, and his voice is being raised. So I understood that whatever I am saying or I'm showing to him is not satisfactory. So I opened the folder with all the documents and the papers that I had and pushed everything toward him. And he looked and he made some comments. And then eventually he took my passport and stamped it. And I said, thank you. And when I said, thank you, he threw the passport at me and said, don't you ever thank me. So at that point, obviously, the stress of the travel, the fear, the insecurity being in the country with no one there to support me and help me, I broke down in front of him, and I was really powerless. So as I am sobbing and trying to put myself together, I felt the hands of someone behind me. And I was so into this emotion that I didn't even realize that someone came to the room and he's holding me. And when I turn around, I saw the gentleman that was sitting next to me in the airplane and walked with me until we separated. He helped me. He gave me his handkerchief. I felt a little bit more comfortable because now there was someone that I knew. There was someone that was trying to help me and support me. And as I, with his help, packed my folder and my papers and walk outside, he tried to make me laugh or be funny. He said, "I want that you learn an important English word." And I said, "What is it?" He said, "Jerk." He was just a jerk, and not everyone is going to treat you that way. So my reference to love and hate was really going through that very a strong emotional experience of someone without knowing me I'm sorry, treating me not well, and someone treating me with so much love. So that taught me also a lot about how our behavior and our judgment about people, because until that moment I didn't have that kind of experience in my life, that harsh type of experience, impacts others. So, but I, even to that experience, still after 40 some years, is extremely painful. Somehow, that emotions come back. I focus on the love. I think it reminds me of when I fell with my dress, and my father told me that you can sit and cry to the circumstances, or you can stand up, and you always have an option. And I always chose love. I always and I always will focus on humanity of all of us rather than those incidents that happens in our life that is out of our control for a variety of reasons.
What were some positive aspects once you came to the United States that you found here?
Well, the biggest one was freedom. The opportunities that existed and as of even today exist for every American and everyone that comes to this country, to this blessed land. So for me, as an Iranian woman that grew up in a country with so many restrictions for women and not equal opportunities that exist for male. So I was able to study what I wanted to study. I was able to choose the work that I want to do. And that freedom was so positive, refreshing, that gave me strength to be able to face anything, that desire to have opportunity to do what you want to do.
How did you come to get involved with New York folklore?
I was working at Centro Civico. That is a Latino non-for-profit organization that originally started in Amsterdam, New York, and over the years grew and provide services to 5 counties in Capital Region. And one of the areas that we organized and we focused was arts and culture. For all our program, we wanted to, whoever we were working, from kids to Latino seniors, we wanted to make sure the work that we do is culturally appropriate and relevant, but also it honors, it respects, it preserves, it teaches the Latino roots and traditions. So I learned about folklore and folk art and all the traditions that Latino community has. So through a grant from New York State Council of the Arts, I was able to have a folklorist to come to Centro Civico and help us to start folk art programming. So that was the beginning of working with folklorists, learning about folk art and traditions, and bring folk artists, do programming. One of the things that I always memories I cherish was getting all the kids wearing traditional clothes of their own country and learning how those clothes were made. So like a fashion show, but it reflects the culture and the design and the shapes and colors and all of that, and a student learning about their own background and their own traditions, and seeing the pride in their faces. So also throughout the community, seeking individuals that were through their work making capias or sewing quinceañera dresses or guido makers. So being able to identify, being able to teach the kids and celebrate and showcase, because it was not just about Latino, but non-Latinos learning about the richness of the culture, and that way bringing people closer to each other.
What were some of the things that you were listing? Just to clarify, what is capia?
Capia is like a party favors. So for every event, when Latinos celebrate baby shower, there are little thing made that when you walk in, they pin to your clothing that has a ribbon hanging, that has the date and the name of the mother that this is the baby shower, if it's a wedding, so on and so forth, you know.
Mm-hmm. So how did you get to, from when you were working at Centro Civico to being a part-time employee over at New York Folklore after you had initially met them through Centro Civico?
So I, through the work, developing a very strong relationship mm-hmm. with New York Folklore as an organization. And then I was asked to serve on their board. So I was a board member, and I saw and learned the other side of running the New York Folklore. And years later, when I retired, the executive director approached me, and she talked about a grant that she has received that is field work within the Capital Region community. And ask if I was interested. And I love the concept of continuously working with the community and identifying artists, folk artists in the region. And in particular, my area of focus was with immigrant and refugee community. That is my personal passion to work because I understand what it takes to go through the process and not be familiar with the system and learn. And sometimes language or culture is a barrier to be able to get through all of that. So I really enjoy the work. And now my work expands to also Utica.
So New York folklore works a lot with the immigrant communities. Can you speak on some of the experiences you had with those communities through New York folklore?
Yes. So from Dominican community to African to European and Central and South American. So identifying folklorists through those community. Some I have familiarity. For example, if I'm working with the Middle Eastern, the language, the culture, I am familiar, or if any Latino community. And some others that I am not familiar, but I learn, and it helped me to grow and learn about other communities.
How do you approach field work?
By developing trust, by developing relationships. When people trust you, then they share not only their roots and traditions, but their home, and you are welcome to come in. And obviously you make observation, you ask questions, and you are observant with how the home decorated and what are the work that they do, how they learned to cook that way, or do that artwork or that sewing. And it's the approach is obviously you're there to learn. And they are the master in their field. And learning how your work can help and support them. So it's not just about your agenda, but looking at that as an opportunity, that how can you also help and support what they are doing to and take it to the next level.
What do you feel is the value of preserving and sharing folklore and folk arts?
I think we all need to know we have roots. It gives us a strength. It empowers us. It helps us to face many adversities that we face in life as a part of going through life. But when we are given opportunity to be ourselves, when you see who you are and what you are all about, is cherished, is respected. People have curiosity to learn and to know. There is a validation about your identity and who you are and what you present, from the language to culture to values. I think that's very important, and we all need that.
Yeah, even that concept of like shared experience.
Yes, absolutely.
Could you tell me about some of the artists that you have worked with or connected with?
Yes, I work with an artist from Afghanistan, She is an Afghani woman that makes jewelry, beautiful necklaces and bracelets. She works with a variety of different stones.